Today is Wednesday. It's April 6th, 2022, and it's 2:36 in the afternoon. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals podcast, and you can listen to me on WGN Radio weekdays from 10 to 2.
Hi, I'm Krista McQuarrie, former journalist, now a communications consultant, and sometimes Mincing Rascals guest.
Yes, one of the original Mincing Rascals, I might add. Welcome back, Kristen.
And I'm Bill Cameron, now retired from covering City Hall for half a century at WLS and WMAP.
I'm Eric Zorn, the surprised publisher of the Picayune Sentinel weekly newsletter on Substack, and also occasionally appearing in the Daily Herald.
Jonathan would be surprised about what would Eric
be surprised about. Me too, now I'm already thinking.
I know he got the Final Four wrong.
Did I though, really? I think I predicted Kansas to win. But yes. what I'm surprised about is that Southwest side Alderman Ray Lopez, then the 15th ward, said this morning that he's going to be running for mayor against Lori Lightfoot. The election will be next February. And I was surprised because we have not had a history in this town of alderman running for mayor, that you have to give up your aldermanic seat to run for mayor. And I didn't think that any of the possible people have been talking about potential aldermen running for mayor for a long time, but I've never thought any of them were really going to do it. It's awfully risky to run against an incumbent mayor. But Lopez, who is a frequent critic of the mayor's, is often sparred with her. He's openly gay, very interesting candidate. And he's the first real, I believe he's the first big name to jump in. I'm trying to think of anybody. I know that Arne Duncan jumped out, and there Willie Wilson is probably going to jump in next week. But I believe this is the first, you know, and there's all kinds of talk about Mike Quigley and all these people. But I was surprised that an alderman was going to run. But I'm really curious what our other panelists think. And I'm really happy to have Bill Cameron with us.
I was not surprised because Ray is so ambitious, he probably couldn't stop himself if he wanted to. But, you know, it's easy to mock him, but he really is very articulate in advancing, you know, really legitimate issues at City Hall. Whether he could amass enough votes to make the runoff and how many candidates are we going to have, I think we're going to have 12, maybe 15 candidates before it's over. But so far, Eric, I would say the lead on the story is he really announced he's not running for re-election as alderman.
Why do you say it's easy to mock him?
Because he is regarded to be the mouthpiece of Ed Burke. You know, when Ray talks, his critics say it's Ed Burke talking. And he's a showboat, no doubt about that. And Lori Lightfoot can't resist the temptation to call him names.
Yeah.
And some of those quotes have jumped out. So I guess I'm not surprised. I guess he would have been surprised if he didn't run.
Yeah, I guess I'm not surprised. I think if some other big hitters jump in, like a Mike Quigley, you could see a Ray Lopez jump out. But at this point, why not? I mean, the field is pretty open. He is sort of the go-to critic of the mayor, which I think probably plays in some circles, but gets old in other circles. And I just wonder what the general public will think about another person with sharp elbows. You know, where the criticism of Lori Lightfoot now is, I think, and I'd love to hear what Bill says, similar to that in Rahm Emanuel, where she's close to needing that blue sweater commercial where she levels with the people and says, you know, I have a way of speaking sometimes that isn't really cordial. And so is Ray. So are we ready for someone else who's going to kind of conquer and divide? Or is that less appealing now than it would have been, you know, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, I kind of think that people want Lori Lightfoot to be strong if she were a man and said these things, a man and straight. She might be admired. So I don't see that as a downside for Lori Lightfoot.
Boy, I do. My view on it has been that there's been sexism in the coverage of her or the interpretation of her. But at the end of the day, I don't think her sharp elbows have helped. I mean, I don't know how we're going to fix Chicago or make it more vibrant or reduce crime, but she has not been able to build a coalition, has she? Regardless of her gender, it sure hasn't helped her demeanor, has it, Bill?
Well, she won every ward, don't forget. Even Tony Preckwinkle's precinct, people, you know, gave her the mandate to go shake up City Hall and do change. And to be tough is a positive. were she to be a Jane Byrne who came in after, you know, criticizing the cabal of evil men in the 79 election, and then she made a deal with the cabal, you know, that just destroyed her. Lori Lightfoot shouldn't do that, isn't, and I think the strong language does not deter.
I was wondering, Bill, what you made of Fran Spielman's report in the Sun-Times about Lightfoot's poor fundraising. It was in this morning's, or in Wednesday morning's Sun-Times. She said that Lightfoot has just $1.7 million in cash in her primary political account, and goes on to point out that Mayor Emanuel, when he was facing some headwinds back in 2015, spent $24.4 million to win re-election. Spielman was kind of speculating that this might indicate that she's going to have a really hard time winning re-election and might not even not run because of
that. I think that means that her traditional supporters are reading the polls and seeing her favorability numbers way down with some disapprovals way up. So they don't see her so far as, you know, a secure investment. But we got a lot of time, and she's the incumbent who gets free media, and she might pivot and change her approach completely, and money might be less of a need than what the others need.
Well, is the blue sweater, Kristen, is that a metaphor, or did she actually do a blue sweater commercial? I think I know what you meant, but I don't know if I'm missing something there.
Rom did. Was it blue? I'll look it up. It was blue or gray. But he did like cashmere V-neck sweater where, you know, it was soft lighting and the camera panned in, and he kind of had to acknowledge that he had ruffled a lot of feathers. And the only reason I think that's important is that if you are so difficult to work with that you can't get your policies approved at the city council, then it's a problem. And I think he was starting to experience that, or at least people were just tired of him, you know, having big personality and maybe not big results. So I'll look it up while we're sitting here. But yes,
well,
he had to do sort of the soft commercial.
I wonder if she would do that. I wonder if that would sell, Eric. Can you see her in kind of a puffy blue sweater saying, hey, listen, I know I've had sharp elbows, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how that commercial sounds.
Boy, you know, the thing is, I was just remembering 2 years ago when the whole meme was Lori Lightfoot with her arms folded and the little cutout of her that people would put
the at tough various auntie,
places
yeah.
in public. I'm turning this car around right now. Memes about her. So I don't know that she needs to do that. I think there, Bill is, and I've heard this from a number of people, which is that this is Lori Lightfoot's brand. Is she is tough and mean, and she's not get along going. And I think it's a really interesting observation that she's kind of the opposite of Jane Byrne in that sense, is that, you know, Byrne decided she was going to join him, and Lightfoot still thinks she can beat him, and that Chicagoans elected her to shake things up. I think some of the questions going to come is, did she make us less safe, or are we less safe under her because of the way she's handled things? And the other question is, if she followed through on some of her promises, like the elected school board, the people are going to say, like, you know, she promised this transparent administration, and yet that's not what we got. So it's going to be an interesting campaign. And one other thought I'm having right while I'm talking about this is that I think there may be a lot of ethnic politics in Chicago. I know, shocking, but that depending on how many Hispanic candidates actually get into the race, this may be a lane for Alderman Lopez to occupy that will make him a very serious contender to get into the runoff. Because if you have, say, Mike Quigley and Paul Vallis and a bunch of other white candidates running, I don't know who's going to run. I'd be interested in hearing what other people think now is going to run. But this could be a field that he could have a lot of running room.
I agree with Eric that crime is a bigger issue. Also, taxes are a bigger issue. The owner of Water Tower Place is giving the joint back to the lender.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really big.
That's really big and really bad. Bad news for what the investment community thinks the future is here. And there are some good stories, too. But I think if, as someone who is going downtown regularly, it's not surprising. There's just not, you know, that whole vibrancy has been lost. I don't know that we're different than other big cities, but we do have a couple of those bigger strikes against us in terms of crime. And as Bill mentioned, taxes. And that's pretty alarming that the investor is just giving up on one of the, you know, sort of monumental developments on the Magnificent Mile.
It was going to be really bad if there's just a big white elephant, literally white, that huge water tower structure. But I, you know, I can see shopping malls around the country are having a lot of trouble. And I don't know how you repurpose. I guess you probably could the water tower place structure, but you know, they lost Macy's, and that really did them in. So,
and then chased Target away when they thought that they might want to try and come here, and yet this week there was a new candy store that's opening up on Michigan Avenue, and I thought, oh please, let's find a way to keep Michigan Avenue special, and this is not that.
Hot dispensaries and gambling.
I think the candy store is in that place right next to Tribune Tower, which is now you know, condos. There are certainly some bright lights, and I think the mayor can run on the struggles that every big city has had. She will get some empathy for having to deal with COVID and George Floyd and all the fallout of that. Of course, there's plenty of criticism in how it was handled, but we're not too far out of what the realm is in terms of other big cities in those two categories.
We have so many problems in the city. We might be in for a string of one-term mayors. And I wouldn't be surprised if Lori Lightfoot doesn't get reelected, assuming, of course, that she goes for reelection.
Well, I wonder what a Ray Lopez could or should do. He said he wants to save Chicago. And I presume that means from the crime and everything that dovetails after that. But what do you do? What's the big mistake, other than being contentious, that Lori Lightfoot has made Chicago so unsafe? Like, what is? I wonder what Ray has in mind.
Where's their program, is what old Ann Daly used to say. And so far, we don't have a lot of proposals, although Paul Vallis is distinct by having a number of programs, particularly with the use of the police. Paul is clearly running. Willie Wilson is clearly running. I mean, there's going to be a dozen of them before it's over. But watch what they propose, not just what they say, because the easiest thing in the world is to do is, with a big problem, just to grandstand by taking pot shots at the incumbent.
Fix it, right?
Yeah, fix it, damn it. Here, pound the table. I'm pounding the table.
I know Lopez has been very critical of Police Superintendent Brown, that he thinks that was a really big mistake, bringing somebody in from out of state to try to run the police department. And, I don't think that a new superintendent is going to solve all these problems, for sure. So, yeah, it is going to be interesting. Paul Vallis has been laying out his ideas in it looks like a series of op-eds in the Tribune, that they regularly allocate space to him, and he regularly has his analysis. So I think you're absolutely right that he's going to jump in again. He didn't do all that well last time. I think he got, 5% of the vote, something like that?
Right.
But it's a different time, and his message may resonate more at this point. It's hard to say. I haven't heard anything from Mike Quigley. People talk about Congressman Quigley running. He's up in my side of the northwest side up here, and he's a good congressman as far as I'm concerned. But I haven't heard what his ideas would be to tackle some of the major problems of Chicago.
Well, does a crowded field help a Lopez? Right? Would that make it easier if there's 12 or 15, like you say, Bill? Does that make it easier for a Lopez to win?
Well, I think it helps Lori Lightfoot, you know, because the more the merrier in the candidates, and she's the incumbent. So she comes to the table with a, you know, certain number of votes, which are, you know, helped by her incumbency and her free media. So I got to say, it helps the stronger candidates. I wouldn't put Paul Vallis in that category just yet, because he did like 5% last time. But if you have a Mike Quigley jump in, you'd certainly think, if there's money behind Mike, that he would benefit in that way with a lot of candidates. But, you know, it's hard to tell not knowing who's in the field.
By the way, producer Pete Zimmerman, Kristen, has just handed me a picture of Rahm Emanuel from his 2015 commercial.
Let's see it.
It's a very soft V-neck sweater. And there he is in a kind of blue-gray sweater. So you got it, girl. I haven't seen Lori in that outfit, and I don't know how that would work.
But coming. It's coming.
You heard it here first. Let's talk a little bit about the companies that are vying for a casino in Chicago, making their public pitches and hearing from residents this week. There's the Hard Rock proposal, the one that's going over the track southwest of Soldier Field. They had their turn last night. There's the Bally's Tribune proposal, the one on the north branch of the Chicago River. They get their turn tonight. And then River 78, which would go on the south branch of the river, is tomorrow night. Seating will be limited to 300 at these meetings. They go 2 hours. I like all of the ideas, to be honest with you. I may prefer the ones on the river more, because it just seems to me like those would be less in the way. And, hey, they're by the river, but I don't really care which. By the way, the Bally's one, the Bally's Tribune one, would include a land sale by the company that owns my radio station. There's my disclosure. But I don't care whose it would be. I just, frankly, I would like any of them.
I'm skeptical of the Hard Rock plan because I think it's connected to it is right now linked with this idea of building over the railroad tracks and the whole development that was going to go up down around that area. And I'm not sure I like it on the lakefront. The Tribune printing plant site seems reasonable to me, although it's already a fairly congested area. And I don't know about the parking there and what that would do to the neighborhood there. And the other one on the river, I don't know. They all seem okay to me. And I feel like it's one of those decisions that they're not going to ask me for my opinion on it. So I'm just going to wait and see what they decide.
And then criticize it, which is what we tend to do.
Oh, absolutely.
My feeling is old school. No matter where you put it, it's still vice. And I know this has been litigated and argued for decades, and everybody's decided that gambling is not vice, but I recently saw a figure that 10% of the people who go to these casinos, you know, get addicted and do have problems. Sports betting has now come on with the same problem. Ruins families, ruins individuals. And so I just don't like it, so I'm not going to pick a spot.
I appreciate what you're saying, Bill, about the vice, but boy, that ship is sailing, isn't it? I mean,
it has.
Everybody's diving in.
I just want to remind everybody, it's vice.
No, it's not vice anymore. It's legal now. I mean, what's the definition of vice, Bill?
You know what I mean.
How about you, Kristen? Do you have any insight on this?
I do. So full disclosure, my communications firm has done consulting work for Hard Rock. So take that into account. I will not dominate the conversation. I will just say that the proposal is separate from that one central that is very controversial, that included a lot of high density building. They can build without that going. There's no taxpayer subsidy money to get Hard Rock. And I just think I've learned about the brand that this is, you know, when you go to a Hard Rock casino, it's a music venue. They get the Rolling Stones. They have really high end restaurants. It's not like slots in a box that you see off the interstate. And so the location, if the idea is to get more revenue for the city and the idea is to pay down public safety pensions, which is the reason that it, even for people who oppose it, that's sort of a convincing factor because we are so underfunded. I just think the foot traffic, it's near the visitors, it's near Navy Pier, it's near Soldier Field. The other two are sort of, you know, you'd have to drive there or figure out transportation. And I'm just not sure they would attract the tourism that we would like this casino to attract.
Do we all believe that the money will do what they're saying it's going to do? Or is there the worry that we'll get like the Illinois lottery switcheroo with education, where the money is dedicated to one area, but then you take the money that was going to that area and you put it somewhere else, so we don't really come out ahead? We don't actually make a dent in that debt.
I was just thinking about this as I was driving on the road that they used to call the Illinois Tollway, but that paid for itself and was made free. Remember that? Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things where, yeah, they promise that all this money is going to go into the right pockets and into the right accounts, and ultimately it seems to get moved around and it doesn't pay off what it's supposed to. But it will help, I think, right? I mean,
we'll put it this way. Does anybody, the vice notwithstanding, Bill, think that a casino in and of itself, suppose it wasn't 10%, suppose it was 0%, people get addicted. Do we like the idea just from sort of an an architectural standpoint, from a city development standpoint. Do we like the idea of these sort of mixed-use entertainment gambling places?
I think it is important that we do the mixed use because there's so much competition these days for gambling. If you were just a casino, you might be very disappointed because sports betting is humongous. People are still buying lottery tickets. There are a lot of alternatives without leaving your house. So it's good that, you know, an entertainment district is and a hotel is involved here to make you leave the house to go get it. Is it a good, you know, forgetting about the vice? Is it good to, you know, put the arm on the suckers? I don't want to agree with that either.
With to Bill's point, I mean, when Illinois approved, I think it was 2011, there was a gaming expansion bill. I might have that date wrong, 2012, where they allowed all those little cafes that you've seen popping up everywhere, the little slot machines, Dottie's yes. Cafe. I mean, that would have been a great place to say, to draw the line. Or maybe in 2019, when they approved six new casinos, including this one, that may have been a place to draw a line. But we are just sort of horse out of the barn here. And so if we're going to do it, it should be done right.
And I was pretty dismayed watching the basketball tournament, how many ads there were for FanDuel and DraftKings. And these are all obviously businesses that are designed, like I guess all businesses, but really to just get your money away from you. And all the come-ons. And Bill's right, there are a lot of people who have problems with this, who can't just use it for entertainment. And they end up costing their families and their professional lives dearly. And when I see how this is encouraged all the time, it's disquieting how much this is going on. But it's one of those things where you think like, well, I guess we've decided as a society that this is where we're going to go and this is going to be okay, and that it's better to do it this way than to have it done under the table, because there's clearly a very strong appetite for people who want to gamble. So we make it legal, just like we make smoking pot legal, and we take a little for the government off the top, and this ameliorates some of the problems that are associated with it. That's where we are as a society. And I share some of Bill's reservations, but I also have kind of realized that, as I think Kristen said, the horse is out of the barn here.
I wanted to talk a little bit, too, about Illinois Democrats who want to provide financial relief to cash-strapped residents. So as I understand it, the budget plan that they're proposing calls for $1.8 billion in tax relief and checks sent directly to people, because that's how we roll now. There would be tax forgiveness on various items, including groceries and clothes and school supplies. And for many people, I expect that will make a big difference. What I don't necessarily trust, though, are the motives of the lawmakers who are pushing this stuff. For instance, are times so tough that we need to do what I think should be extraordinary measures at extraordinary times? And if that's where we are right now, do we need to be sending $100 checks to people who are making less than $250,000 a year? Because that's the threshold. Who's coming up with these kinds of numbers? That just seems unnecessary to me. The city's plan calls for gas cards, $150 if you make the original proposal was less than $91,000 a year. The city council is tweaking that now, and maybe the threshold will be a bit less than that. But it would still be $65,000. If you make less than that, then they'd give you either a Venture card or a gas card. Since the stimulus checks first rolled out during the pandemic, we seem to be in the habit, guys, of giving money away. So my last thought is, if we have so much to give away, then maybe we shouldn't have taken it in the first place.
Is there an election coming?
Oh, my God. You may be onto something there, Bill.
The Democrats, I mean, I made a list of the free stuff the Democrats are offering as the elections approach. You mentioned the gas cards. There's also free CTA rides in that. There's actually hard cash for minimum basic income that the mayor has gotten approved.
Yeah.
Gas cards, also bikes. They're giving away free bicycles along with helmets and locks. Business subsidies for both startups and corporations are a big tradition down at City Hall. They're even eliminating fines for overdue library books. About the only legitimate one I could come up with was vaccinations for COVID and masks for people when we had to wear masks. But lots of free stuff, guys, because there's elections coming.
Don't forget the free doorbell cameras that they're going to be giving out. Did you hear about that?
There's a string attached to that, though, right, Eric, that the police would be dialed in on that as well?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that even belongs in the same bucket, because it is a whole different idea. This plan, and there are sort of two plans. One, if you say the Democrats in Springfield, the Senate has its own plan that they're calling Pay It Forward. And then the House has its own plan, which is called the Total Illinois Family Recovery Act, which is for a little bit less money. And it's more giving like tax breaks and targeted tax relief to low income people, which is a little less generous than the Senate plan. And what the reporting I read this morning was that the governor prefers the House plan because it's a little less ambitious, but it is, you're rightfully right that there's a lot of giveaways going in the city and the state level. And I have the same feeling that you do, John, which is that it would have been nice if they had either not taken that money from us in the first place, or given that they have a surplus now, and I think it's supposed to be $150 million? What is it? What is the surplus? Not billion. $150 million surplus.
I think it's $157.33.
but whatever that surplus is, I would like to see it going toward paying down some of these long-term obligations. And Kristen may have heard of this. I don't know. Well, we have an outstanding pension obligations in Illinois. You know, you probably should be thinking about how are we going to stabilize our economy, have a good rainy day fund, so when there is another true crisis like the pandemic, we are in shape to have one. Because the stats I saw the other day about we have like one day's worth of money in the rainy day fund, which is the lowest in the entire country. And I just think that's something that we should probably be thinking about rather than sales tax holidays and things like that, which are going to add pennies to people's accounts.
You know what I'm going to say, right, John? Eric, Bill, why do you keep voting for the same? Why do we keep voting for one party rule when these are the results we get? They overtax you and then they dangle a tax break in front of you. We have the fifth highest gasoline taxes at the pump in the country. How about rolling back some of those? We have made a tiny bit of progress in our unfunded pension liabilities, but only because returns went crazy last year because of inflation. And that will come back to bite us. There's really nothing been done about the unfunded pension liability. We still have $4.8 billion in unpaid bills. So we do not and have not had a balanced budget in Illinois for 20 years, regardless of who's in charge. But there's one party that's been in charge of the legislature exclusively since 2002. I think it's totally offensive that they think all of these handouts, you know, that we're that dumb, really. That's what I think.
You know, the Democrats just love to spend, tax and spend, as the Republicans like to say. I remember when Rod Blagojevich walked into the Capitol building for the first time in 2001, he came out and talked to us and said, "I just looked at the books. These guys spend like drunken sailors," which he did, too, in the few years that followed. The Democrats just can't help themselves. They just love to spend.
And this paternalistic attitude that, hey, times are tough, so we're going to come to the rescue. We're going to help you. I know times are tough and tougher for some people. We had that K-shaped recovery out of the pandemic that still stings people. But I'll give you another example of something that just kind of gets in my craw these days, and that is forbearance on student loans. So the federal government has now said you don't have to pay. It'll be 2.5 years before anybody's had to make a student loan payment. And regardless of the merit of that idea, I mean, they keep extending it. Now here comes another election. They're still entertaining the idea of maybe $10,000 of student loan forgiveness. At some point, the idea is, in America, you borrow money, you pay it back. Times are tough. You got to work harder or smarter, but it'll be tougher for some than others. And in dire situations, of course we help our neighbors. But every time there seems to be a pinch now, from the federal government on down, they come rushing to you with aid. And I said paternalistic. I know there's always another election coming up, but it seems to be sort of a sea change about how we are redistributing wealth these days, how we're just giving money to people because, by golly, times are tough.
Well, since Heather Sharon is not here to scold me, I will revive my suggestion that we have these kinds of programs means tested. I don't have a problem with forgiving student loan for people who are really, you know, way underwater in debt. That it is a true drag on the economy to have these people who are deeply in debt. I don't have too much of a problem with a lot of the earned income tax credit relief that the House is considering now in Springfield. I do have a problem with these sort of sweeping programs that are not really targeted at the people who are really hurting. And John, I agree with you that I think the government does need to step in, does need to help people when they are hurting in a crisis. But I think that some of the ways that they're going about it just feel very Santa Claus.
Well, is expensive gas right now a crisis? Like, oh my God, we've got a. I don't care if you're making $249,000. Here's $100 to help you with the gas bill. I mean, is it such a four alarm fire that the state or even city has to subsidize people's gas?
I would say that yes, in some cases it is, but not for everybody, and probably not even for people making up to 100% of the median income. I think for some people who are at the low end of the wage scale, who have to drive to work, yes, it is a problem. But we are attacking it, I think, in the wrong way. And I think it's a way that people will get a check in the mail or a free card in the mail. They go, oh, I like this politician. They're giving me money.
I should say that higher education can't stand a search. It's been such a bad bargain for so long. I'm not, you know, unsympathetic to the idea of suspending for even more time, having to make payments on college debt, because it's just so outrageously expensive, especially for what you get. So maybe that's a legitimate purpose for government to step in and do.
I agree that it's gotten too expensive, but boy, I know people who bought houses they shouldn't have bought or cars that they shouldn't be driving, and I guess they should have known better in those cases too. Where do you draw the line, Bill?
I like Eric's idea to means test it. You don't subsidize those who can afford it anyway. I like that.
Producer Pete handed me this. Zero members of the budget committee who have spoken during the meeting have endorsed Mayor Lightfoot's plan.
But she's getting her headline.
So really, you think, for instance, because it seems to me like you're suggesting two things at once, Bill. You're saying that she's been an outlier, and maybe that's attractive, but her numbers are down maybe as a result of that. So do people perceive Lori Lightfoot favorably because she's going to fight these bastards, or do they think she's not getting anything done because of that, and we shouldn't reelect her? I wonder what the general population thinks about Lori Lightfoot.
Mark Medina is flexible. You make a good point. You know, I still think that they admire her for being tough, and they wouldn't be tough on a man who said the same things. I mean, that's just coming from my gut after covering all those mayors for all those years.
Well, what's the line? You can't you can't beat someone with no one, or something like that. How's that saying go, Eric?
That's exactly right.
I think she's. If no one runs against her and gives her a tough, you know, run, she still has time to kind of reshape that message. And I think she's already tried to. She's tried to be a little bit more supportive of police. She has acknowledged, you know, the crime problem. You are seeing some distance finally between elected officials and the state's attorney's office, which I think the public wants to see. But I mean, when it comes down to it, I think voters will, if their quality of life is worse 4 years later and you feel less safe than you did 4 years ago, you will take a risk on a change candidate. And that will be her biggest hurdle that she has to cross.
Last year, Chicago gave out more speed camera tickets than it has people. 2.81 million tickets. We don't have that many people in the city. And of the 2.73 million people that we do have in Chicago, many of them aren't drivers. So if you did not get a camera ticket, consider yourself lucky, because many of you got more than one for going 6 miles an hour or more over the speed limit. The city is profiting at a rate of $245,000 a day on this program. The Illinois Policy Institute this week noted that 20 more people died in crashes on Chicago streets in 2021 under this program than in 2020, for a total of 167 deaths. Now, granted, there were maybe fewer people on the roads in 2020 than 2021. But in fact, there were only 108 fatal crashes in 2019. The point being that not only did we make more money, but in fact, we did not save more lives with this program than in a year, a more normal year, when it wasn't in place. So it does look like a cash grab.
Well, John, one of the startling figures in that Illinois Policy Institute report was that we collected $89 million in 2021, but of that amount, two-thirds of it came from those tickets that were issued after March 1st for going just 6 to 10 miles an hour over the limit. Like, these are the ticky-tack speeding fines, right? The ones where they lowered the limit. So two-thirds of that fine money came from those tickets. And I mean, that is the kind of thing that is going to, I think, figure into the mayor's race. If you're going to have somebody who's going to get up and say, look, let's go back to 10 miles an hour over the limit. Because if you remember, Mayor Lightfoot ran on the premise that we weren't going to fine and fee our way out of our budget problems. And that's exactly what's going on with these speeding cameras.
Kristen, did you get one of the tickets yet?
Yes, recently. For exactly what you're saying, Eric, I was driving past, it must have been, I think, Maggie Daly Park, maybe on Columbus. And I was going 6 miles over the speed limit and I got a ticket. And I just think we shouldn't go back to 10 miles over. Whoever wants to win the mayoral race, come up with a plan to get rid of these. I mean, it is beyond just a safety issue. We all know that it's a cash grab, but it's also to a point where it's almost predatory. There's a lot of data showing that the people who get stuck in bankruptcy court or they get a boot put on their car, and all of those folks who live on the brink, paycheck to paycheck, these fines and fees hurt them the most. And so if you are truly wanting to help the people who are struggling, get rid of this program and figure out another way to make up that revenue. It was a bad idea from the start under Rahm Emanuel, and it's a bad idea now.
This is one of those issues that looks great on paper. Find them automatically with a speed camera. But the custom and practice of driving in this area is, you know, you go at least 5 over the speed limit. And they usually don't stop you in the suburbs for more like 11. You know, it is predatory at 6, and it is paid mostly by those who can't afford it. So I agree with Kristen that the candidate who comes up with a way to eliminate these nasty cameras will have a, you know, perhaps a winning argument there.
You know what they say on my text line when this comes up?
Put them in jail.
They say, if you can't pay the fine, don't do the crime, right?
Like, no, I mean, I hear that. And we used to have those arguments around the Tribune editorial board. But that's where I use the word predatory with purpose. These have gone beyond wild drivers risking other people's lives. And it has become predatory, where data has shown, and WBEZ has done great reporting on this. I think the BGA, maybe the Trib sometimes, discredit everybody. That they are hurting people who are, we knew with the red light cameras for a while, if you pulled over the line in order to check traffic, you could get hit with a ticket. We saw through reporting years ago with the Tribune that the length of the yellow light was being manipulated. People went to prison over this bit.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So the fact that we keep expanding it is just, I don't know. Again, I'll just say predatory.
And if I'm not mistaken, one of the other things the report found was that where you do maybe slow people down because they know there is one of those cameras, they then tend to speed up even more to make up for the loss. Now they get impatient, or they're angry that they had to slow down, or maybe they're angry they got a ticket. But overall, you're just putting the speeding somewhere else.
You think that's why we had more accidents? Is that the theory as to why there are more accidents? Because I mean, I don't even understand how that would work.
Well, I think the argument is, if you see the sign that says there's a speed camera ahead, you hit the brake and get rear-ended. Again, looks great on paper, but in practical life, you know, like Kristen says, predatory.
Who else has gotten a ticket? I don't think that question went around the table. And,
well, I asked you first.
Have a lot of experience about the suburbs, the city.
I thought on your commute, when you used to come to the Tribune, would go around where the Science and Industry Museum is and around that park. And that's where one of the more profitable cameras is for the city. So I was wondering if that one got you, but you got one on Columbus Avenue, right?
I think so. I think it was by Maggie Daly Park. And I also am pretty sure it was during park, you know, the parks were shut down. Remember for a while during COVID?
Yeah.
There were actually chain link locks around some of the public parks and
sure.
The kids were learning from home. But did we still get tickets for going too fast across those boundaries? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Near a park, you get dinged for speeding going by a park when the park is closed. That's certainly true here on the Northwest Side, that the park closes at a certain time, but you can get a ticket 24 hours a day for exceeding the speed limit.
Did you get a ticket, Eric?
I did not get a ticket for speeding. I've gotten a bunch of red light camera tickets over the years, though. And it's almost always because I don't come to a full stop when I'm turning right on red and there's no traffic around. And, you know, it's wrong. I throw myself at the mercy of the court.
I don't even think it's
but
wrong.
It's not.
It's like, what's the definition of vice? It's wrong-ish. I mean, you know, the rules should work for us. We shouldn't work for the rules. Are these people really doing something that is inherently wrong or even dangerous?
Well, what I was doing was not dangerous at all. I went and watched the videos and I'm like, okay, well, you got me, but come on.
I had to pay a red light camera fine once because one of my kids ran a red light in one of our cars, which reminds me that it's unfair for the registered owner to have to pay the fine if that person is not the driver. So there's another reason to be against it.
Well, can I tell a quick, great story about that very quickly? Friend of a friend was among, unfortunately, the many people carjacked in the city last summer. Her car was then illegally parked, driven here, cameras. She got so many tickets from the city and every time was calling and saying, my car was stolen and here's the record of it. And I mean, again, just typical bureaucracy. It took months to get this straightened out to a point where her driver's license was almost going to be suspended.
My producer's just handed me this now from those hearings. Alderman Andre Vasquez with another zinger. If we're talking about saving drivers money, couldn't you just repeal the speed cameras? Because that would lead to a lot less people having to pay, and you wouldn't have to pay $12.5 million to do it. Not a bad point from that alderman as the hearing goes
on. Maybe the compromise here is to, keep the cameras, but put it up at 10 miles over the speed limit.
Bill Cameron for mayor.
Yeah, I was just going to say, one of you.
You just hammered out a compromise right here.
I don't even live in the county.
Oh, okay.
I want to say, did everything we could to get people vaccinated in Chicago and the state of Illinois, for that matter, including bribing them. And in the case of city workers, threatening to fire them. Now the state has a law that says that teachers and school workers don't have to use sick days if they're sick with COVID, if they've been vaccinated. And they will get sick days back if these people previously used them, if they were vaccinated. Unvaccinated people will have to use their sick days if they come down with COVID. There's the difference. And I don't know if I like that idea. Schools are open. It's mask optional. If someone gets sick, I think they should be treated the same way as everyone else, irrespective of their status. You know, look, put it this way. Doctors treat everyone, even if you've not been vaccinated, even if you brought this upon yourself. So maybe schools should treat everyone the same.
I don't think we should punish them because we now have learned vaccinations don't prevent COVID. So it just doesn't make sense to me right now when I'm sure we all know people who have been vaccinated, boosted even, and still gotten COVID. So I don't think it makes sense now to turn around and punish people who maybe they didn't get vaccinated because they already had COVID, which we were told initially was the greatest immunity you could have. It's just, again, sort of the standard of, you know, punishment for people who choose to not get vaccinated. And I don't really agree with that.
Vaccinations don't prevent COVID. They do prevent COVID in a lot of people, but not in everybody. Is that fair?
Well, yes, I suppose that's fair, but they are not as preventative as we were originally told, that's for sure. And the amount of preventative measures that were promised in getting boosted, I think, have also been, there have been enough, there's enough data now to knock that down as well.
Well, they're super duper preventative, if I may use that scientific phrase. They're the most effective vaccines we've ever had, right? The COVID vaccines.
Well, why are people still getting COVID then?
Because the whole planet's been vaccinated and many, many people will get it. But the, as a percent, it's extraordinarily efficacious. As a matter of public policy, you should encourage or even mandate. You're not arguing against vaccines, are you?
No, of course not. I'm vaccinated and boosted. My whole family is. I just think at this point, when we have more data on how effective the vaccine is, to be turning around now and punishing people or giving certain rewards to certain teachers and not, is just, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I just got my second Pfizer booster yesterday. I still don't understand why anybody wouldn't follow the science and get vaccinated to the hilt to prevent something from making you sick or killing you. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for people who don't get vaccinated. On the other hand, here I'm showing my flexibility again, John. I don't want to punish anybody for, you know, getting sick. That's not right either.
And you know what I might do in a roundabout way, Eric? Think about this is, okay, fine, I can't use my sick days because I'm sick with COVID because I didn't get vaccinated. So maybe I won't, so I'll continue to go to school. I won't tell people. I mean, in a way, it might have the exact opposite effect. We should give these people every opportunity to stay well and stay isolated, and punishing them by saying you can't use your sick days because you didn't get vaccinated seems to almost be counterproductive.
Well, that's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that idea that you would be, because most people who get COVID these days don't have these horrible cases. They have what feels like a bad cold in some cases, sometimes maybe even the flu. I'm all for carrots and sticks when it comes to vaccines. I think that although the vaccines don't prevent you from getting COVID, they vastly reduce the severity of the cases they've found. Most people who are hospitalized or go to the ICU are people who are not vaccinated. And it also helps diminish the spread of the disease. So it is sort of a civic-minded thing to get this vaccine, that it helps to curb the pandemic. So I'm in favor of this, of drawing a line, saying, and all, in a sense, it's rewarding. You can say that it's punishing these people who didn't get the vaccine, and another way you could look at it is it's rewarding the people, the teachers who did get the vaccine, who took the responsible step of trying to protect the community, not just themselves. And so that's where I am on it. I'm very pro vaccine on this, and as you know, not really patient with people who don't get it. I would make an exception, of course, for anyone who's immunocompromised, whose physicians recommend against it. But for the most part, I'm okay with it.
I don't think it makes sense. And if COVID is as bad as we all believe it is and know that it is, then let everyone use extra time and not have to use sick days for getting it without coming to some conclusion about why people chose to not get vaccinated or not. I mean, it's been 2 years. I just think we've gotten to a point where those decisions haven't been made. People are going to get vaccinated or they're not. And the more we keep pushing this just seems useless to me.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. People have made up their minds. So science fought its best fight. I think, if nothing else, this pandemic has taught us something about communication and persuasion and human nature. And the next pandemic, we ought to learn from this and find out the best way to get people to follow the science. But what we did this time just didn't work perfectly. Is there anything on the political front, Eric, that you want to hit before we go?
And we can talk just a little bit about Alexei Janulis has started advertising on TV, and he is promoting his friendship with Barack Obama and his basketball career. And he's talking about using the Secretary of State's office for streamlining the voting process and making it more fair. The Secretary of State in Illinois does not have a lot to do with elections compared to other states. But this is shaping up to be a fairly interesting battle between Janulis and Anna Valencia. And Alderman David Moore is also running. I don't think he's very well funded. But that race right now. And the other thing that's interesting to me, and I've let people at the table here talk about this also, which is this these attacks on Richard Irvin, the mayor of Aurora, the Republican gubernatorial hopeful. The Democratic Governors Association has been attacking him for his work as a defense attorney, which I think is very interesting, although it kind of runs against the general Democratic Party line, which is that everybody deserves a fair trial and deserves to have competent representation. So that's an interesting line of attack. So I've been watching some of the chess moves in the governor's race right now, but it still strikes me how Irvin is not putting himself up for debates. We haven't had any real debates between the major Republican candidates yet, and we're getting kind of close. I mean, the election's in June. And it's by this time in the last cycle, there'd been a bunch of different debates, and right now there isn't. And I'm not sure what's going on. And I'd be interested to know.
Bill, it seems like you're afraid to unleash Richard Irvin or to give him a long leash.
I want to say, with regard to political ads, you know, when I see one coming at me, I hit fast forward or mute, because they're all lies. They're all lies. Just don't infect yourself with them.
I was intrigued by the flyer that the Irvin campaign sent out about Darren Bailey, and they are supposed to indicate on the flyer who paid for it, and they said, oh, it was a printing error. We meant to put on there that we were the ones that said those terrible things about Darren Bailey. I thought it was a waste of ink, because Darren Bailey is your downstate kind of Trumpish candidate, and yet he has revealed that he did vote for Barack Obama in a primary years ago because he was trying to make sure that Hillary Clinton didn't get on the ticket. So he jumped parties at the primary to try and do that game that a lot of people say they're going to do but never do. He said he did it. So now the flyer says that Darren Bailey is an Obama, Biden, or Democrat. Like, no, he's not. That you might as well say he's from Mars. That's a stupid thing to say.
That's almost the I'm rubber, you're glue approach by the Irvin campaign, because that's everybody is a lot of people are accusing Irvin of being essentially a Democrat who has become a Republican for convenience sake. If anyone's got a more Democratic record, it's Irvin. So he's using the same language to attack Bailey, which is absurd. Anyone who knows anything about Darren Bailey knows that he is the furthest thing from a Biden-Obama Democrat.
Dick Ogilvie, the governor, used to say a month or two before an election, we're in the silly season. Here's evidence for this cycle right now. Old man Daley used to quote FDR by saying, 2 weeks before an election, I never read a newspaper for the same silly reason.
I still would like to see what that guy's like unscripted, though, Irvin. I would like to see him in a debate. I would like to see him in front of a hot microphone, you know, an open microphone, a live microphone, just engaging with Darren Bailey or with Eric Zorn or somebody, just, you know, at some length.
And you're not going to.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, there are too many contradictions which could be brought out. They've put their campaign on Ken Griffin's money, and they will communicate only through the TV ads.
That's it, guys. Although sometimes we, at the end of the podcast, Kristen, you remember this, we used to say, give us any recommendation for anything you're watching, listening to, reading, eating, or drinking. By the way, I'll go first. So I've been really enjoying on HBO the Winning Time sort of docuseries about the 1980s Lakers. Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jerry Best, Jerry West. That's fantastic. It's not all about basketball. It's really well done. Surprising. It's funny. And it's kind of revealing in ways. So if you're not even into Magic Johnson and Jabbar and the Lakers and how that really was a turning point for the NBA, I think you would enjoy it for the performances.
The Gilded Age was pretty good. I think that was on HBO. I'd recommend that. Wonderful sets and design and costumes, and I won't give away the ending, but, you know, it was very Gilded Age.
I love that series. That is so beautiful to look at. The houses those people lived in, the Vanderbilts and stuff like that.
I am catching up on Succession on HBO, and I'm having a great time watching that. It's sort of the Murdoch family, maybe the Trump family, and now maybe a little of the Ricketts family playing in there. Just a fascinating series, and don't tell me how season 3 goes, because I'm not there yet.
Fair enough. How about you, Kristen? Any recommendations for us?
No, I'm feeling the pressure to come up with something.
Not even a cocktail?
Not even a cocktail. How deficient am I? No, I'm not really watching a show right now. I finished a book for my book club, but it was American Dirt, which was excellent, but many people read it in, 1992. I'm just catching up. Cocktails. I'll just have to come back and
yes. Well, there you go. There's your standing invitation. Next time I want a cocktail in your hand, okay?
Okay.
Kristen, thanks for joining us. And Bill, thanks for joining us as well. What a pleasure, both of you.
My pleasure. Although I should say, John, I think this is my first time, I think this is true, on WGN Radio. It's the one big stick AMer I don't think I've ever been on.
Wow.
Bucket list.
Yeah. I hope it's lived up to all of your expectations about being on our little radio station. You were terrific. We really appreciate it. We'll call you again if you don't mind.
It was great.
Please do. This is fun.
All right, guys. All right. Eric Zorn also on the panel, of course. Most of our regulars off today, but we always appreciate their participation. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams, and we'll drop another pod on you next week.
It's great to disagree with Kristen again. It's so refreshing. It's been a while.
It's just Kristen, like an old shoe.
Slide into our old ways. Okay. Good seeing everybody.
Okay, guys. See ya.
Take care, gang. Thank you.
Bye now.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.